Blog Talk Radio.
Just beautiful. Good evening and welcome to the Coffee Clutch. This is Marianne Russo. I'm so excited to have everyone joining us here tonight. We have our tweet chat open. Pierrette D'Entremont and Chuck Wally are holding down the fort there, so you can go over and interact and discuss the interview. I know I have been gushing about this interview for weeks, but I think when we're done, you're going to understand why. A savant is a person with an inexplicable talent. It is thought to be something a person is either born with or acquired, and a neurotypical by a brain injury or a trauma. And as the mystery of the brain unfolds in tonight's interview, you know, I can't help but wonder, you know, is it possible that these savant skills, whether, you know, they're a miracle or a gift, you know, they're just some type of undiscovered form of awakening. And tonight you will meet one of the world's most interesting men. He is the only documented case of a musical savant skills through a brain injury. He is considered to be one of the 10 most fascinating savants in the world, and his acquired musical savant syndrome make him 1 in 7 billion, and the only medically documented case on the planet. So Derek Amato is my guest. Derek acquired the skill to play at a level of a concert pianist. After a diving incident, and Derek had never touched a piano before. So I am very excited to bring you, as he's known, the Rain Man Beethoven, Derek Amato. Welcome.
Hello, Marianne. How are you?
I'm terrific. You know, your life is just so incredible. I'm so glad that you joined us here tonight. You know, I wanted to start off discussing, you know, your life before the incident, because you know, it had to be so dramatic. So, you know, first, if you can just tell us, what is a savant syndrome or, you know, synthanasia?
Well, both of them are kind of interesting, obviously. The savant syndrome, when I was diagnosed with that terminology, I was really kind of put into a different little circle, because obviously there's the prodigy of savants that are born with a gift, whether it's mathematical or music or what have you. And since I hadn't had the musical abilities, until after my accident, so I was considered an acquired savant. So a totally different classification, although in the same realm, if you will. Synesthesia is where, you know, the way Dr. Reeves at the Mayo Clinic described it to me is my circuitry, my wires into my brain, if you will, kind of crossed when I had my accident. And it created a small window of opportunity for what I see as shapes and colors and different things that are going through my mind. My brain takes those and shapes them into musical notation, and that's basically what my hands do when I sit down to play the piano or another instrument. So synesthesia is really just another shape of your brain taking information and forming it into the end result, which in my case is music.
It's incredible, you know, and they say that, excuse me, everyone has a different style of thinking. So from what you can remember, what was your style of thinking? Were you a visual thinker? Like, did you visualize things, which a lot of creative people do?
Before my accident or after?
Right.
My
accident? Before.
Before, I think I've always been a creative thinker outside the box. I've always tried to be anyway. Certainly after my accident, it became more of a visual, just simply because these notes were already being built and designed. So in reference to how it works, you know, it's always turned on. So that little switch it gives me the ability to visualize and see these musical notes going through my mind's eye. And that's what I... That's kind of how it all
kid,
works.
Did you have a lot of music in your life? I mean, you know, what was your childhood like?
A musician. I dabbled with the guitar, and I played guitar when I was a kid. I smacked the drums a little bit when I was younger. I always wanted to somehow be on the front of the stage, and of course, you know, growing up after high school, I went into regular corporate America and working regular jobs, and really never had the opportunity as an adult to further my music abilities until really after my accident. But I had a typical growing up as a kid. I was an athlete. I really grew up playing baseball and raising my little brother, if you will.
Right. And that seems to be one of your passions, too, the baseball. You know, I mean, the savant skills are so often associated with autism. As a child, were you ever told or do you ever remember having any type of autistic traits or presentations, or were you always just neurotypical?
I think I was a neurotypical kid for the most part. I guess my mother may have different answers to that question. I'm sure she would call me all kinds of things, but
wouldn't they all, right?
Well, you know, she's been my best friend through life, and it's amazing how this all has transpired. Because when I think back to when I was a kid, my mother told me, and we all do, we all tell our children that they're special. But my mom told me I was a special child, and I was selected to touch people and work through people, and that just stayed with me, and it's starting to make sense now as an adult, and especially after my accident.
Right, and you know, we say that all the time here on the Coffee Clutch, that everybody has a gift.
Absolutely.
You know, and you just have to foster it, and in your case, you know, like I said before, it's really, to me, it's like it's just an awakening. But, you know, you were just starting to say about, you know, you went into, you know, the corporate world. So, you know, before the accident, what was your adult life like? Because you weren't a musician.
I worked in telecom as a corporate sales trainer for a few years with an amazing group of people out in San Diego. And before that, I was the public relations director for a French company called the French Foundation. And then I worked in the mixed martial arts industry as well as a promoter and a trainer, doing, you know, stuff. I was heavily involved in the mixed martial arts. I grew up in the mixed martial arts because my father was an instructor as well. So that was, you know, my typical work life was really quite normal. I was very lucky to have some great experiences and learn from some amazing minds in the business world. But now when I look back, I don't know if I could ever go back to working in corporate America, simply because I've got to see a whole different side of I guess my job now is so different. And I never realized I could have so much fun working a job.
Right. It's almost like a purpose, you know.
I think you're right. I think it is a purpose.
Yeah, it's just incredible. So, you know, let's get to the day of the accident. Because, you know, you're walking around, you know, Mr. Corporate America, you're hanging out with your friends, and, you know, tell the audience what happens.
We got together. I went back to visit my mother in the Midwest, and we got together, which we commonly, you know, always do with some kids I went to high school with. And we had a barbecue, and we were actually throwing one of those little tiny rubber footballs around over the water and jumping, diving in, trying to catch it. And when I dove into the shallow end, which I just thought I could, you know, roll into the water as I was attempting to catch the football. I don't remember if I caught the football, but I did dive into the shallow end and hit the bottom. And when I hit the bottom, the only thing I really remember from the entire incident was a loud, like a bomb had went off. It was just an incredibly loud, a big bang, if you will. And I knew immediately that something was seriously wrong. And when I remember slowly coming out of the water, but my last memory really is thinking my ears were bleeding and looking up at my friends coming out of the water. And I could see them saying something to me, but I couldn't hear anything. So I couldn't hear anything at all. And then I somehow made my way to the edge of the pool, and then I collapsed. And they took me into the house. And from my understanding, I had came to a couple times during that 3-4 minute space and collapsed 3 or 4 more times by the time they were dragging me down to their apartment, which was probably, you know, 50, 60 yards from the swimming pool.
And how old are you?
Really, I'm 44.
Well, you're 44 now, but how old are you?
Yeah.
Well, how old were you when you
40.
Had, when you had the accident?
I was 40.
40. Okay.
Yeah.
And still hot dogging around the pool.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I still act like a kid, even when I'm, you know, an adult body. I'm still acting like a kid. I don't know if that's ever going to go away. I sure in the heck hope not.
You know, so you weren't knocked unconscious initially, but, you know, you wound up that you had a concussion. So,
I had a severe concussion, yes.
Right. So you hit your head on the bottom of the pool? Is that what happened? Or did you jam your neck? Do you remember? Does anybody know what happened?
After the next day, the swelling was so intense that you could certainly tell where I hit my face. I hit the top left upper part of my head. I guess the left upper part of my forehead, if you will. And I, you know, the next day my eyes were black and I kind of looked like the Elephant Man, if you will.
Wow.
The left side of my head didn't look very appealing. And of course I was bruised and I did kind of mess my neck up a little from the impact. And then I lost, you know, about almost, well, today it's about 40%. My hearing is deteriorated from the impact. So I lost 30 to 35% of my hearing on the initial impact, and it's slowly deteriorating. So I would imagine, you know, when my ego will let me get a grip on putting a hearing aid on, I will have to, because I think my friends and family are getting tired of saying, huh, or what. They're tired of me asking them to repeat themselves.
Right. And, you know, concussions are so common, and you did have a severe concussion, but, you know, they're so common. You know, was there anything unusual about the injury? I mean, you said that you, millions of people get concussions. You said that you hit your head on your forehead, so that would be the frontal lobes. But studies of the brain scans have shown that specific parts of the brain affect musical ability and creativity. Do you know what portions of the brain? I always thought that was the cerebellum. But do you know what portions of the brain and how it was affected in you? I mean, what did they tell you?
Well, they told me that the impact from the left side of my upper head damages usually the back side, the opposite side of where the impact is.
Okay.
So they were looking for damage initially in the right rear lower lobe, because obviously that would be the opposite of my front left upper.
Mm-hmm.
They found damage to my cerebellum in my most recent studies at the Mayo Clinic, and then I also had several spots on my brain that I just have to kind of watch to make sure they don't obviously grow into any tumorous situations or bleeding situations or something like that. But from my understanding, after watching the they did these interesting scans when I was at the Mayo Clinic that basically lit up my brain in different areas and in different colors.
Right.
And the left upper lobe was really intensely bright. I guess if you were looking at a normal brain, it would, you know, the colors are a little not so bright, and there's consistency. Mine was a little more inconsistent, meaning the other colors on the other side of my brain were normal, but the left upper side of my brain was extremely bright and firing, if you will, just incredibly bright.
Right, so that was probably a PET scan, I would think, right, to show the activity.
And then of course, then I did, you know, a full MRI, you know, when I was filming as well. So, you know, as far as I understand, that the upper and the left side, left half of my brain is basically stimulated, constant stimulation. And then they did make some recommendations. I had my first seizure about 4 months ago, and they had given me, you know, some warning that this could possibly happen, and it sure did. But I'm not willing to really, I really just don't want to be medicated. And not just for the fact that maybe it'll slow the music down or stop the music. I just really don't care to be medicated, honestly.
Yeah,
and,
well, it can have the cognitive dulling. But I would imagine you've only had the one seizure. That's got to be really scary, though.
It was a little different, and it was weird because I didn't know, really. I didn't fall on the ground and start shaking. I kind of just sat back in the chair, and my neck and my lips kind of turned a little blue, and I couldn't talk, and my neck and the side of my face was numb. And I just was in these little shakes for about I suppose, 30 seconds. It wasn't very long. My mother was actually visiting and was with me at the time, so afterwards I felt fine. I had a headache afterwards, and I took a little nap, and I felt totally fine afterwards.
You know, and you said
so
that you've been...
So it's a little scary.
Yeah, you know, and to, you know, not know what's coming. But, you know, I mean,
yeah.
With the negatives come the positives with everything else. You know, you were saying that you go to the Mayo Clinic, which, I mean, it's, you know, world-renowned. So, you know, I would assume that you've been poked and prodded, you know, because, I mean, this is just so amazing. So, you know, what are they telling you? I mean, how does this happen? Because, you know, what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, you weren't a musician. You never touched a piano. So...
Right.
How was this information in your brain that it could be acquired or awakened?
Well, I use Dr. Trefford's, you know, he's such an incredibly gifted man when it comes to savant studies, and the Wisconsin Medical Society, they are definitely the leader of the pack in savant studies, and there's some other wonderful doctors, but I've gotten close to Dr. Trefford, you know, in the last couple of years because I worked with him when I was interviewing for his book, Islands of Genius. So I got to learn quite a bit. And he really kind of explained it, and I truly believe it, that we all have these gifts, and the brain is such an undiscovered item that I, you know, this was my sixth or seventh concussion. So he believes that certain concussion, just there was a window of space, an opportunity, and the little switch was turned on, and those abilities just came to, they surfaced. And that's how I kind of look at it. I'm not, as a Christian person, I just simply tell people, this is my gift from God, because that's truly how I feel. It was, that is my gift from God.
Right.
But
right.
On a medical, you know, on that spectrum of it, the only explanation we can come up with is we do believe, or I believe after, you know, learning from these physicians that, We do have this gift, and whether it's musical or mathematical or artistic in any shape or form, it's just a matter of how we turn on that latent or that undiscovered area of our brain so we can really utilize and express those talents or gifts.
I mean, it is amazing because, I mean, you see these children, you see children on the spectrum that have these mathematical abilities. And
right.
It's just incredible. You know, you give them a day, and you know that it's just incredible. You know, I don't know if anybody will ever really figure out how that happens, but you know, I would imagine how this unfolded must have just been so incredible for you. I mean, I can just imagine. I've always wanted to play the piano. I could just imagine one day being able to be like a concert pianist. It must be incredible. So
it would probably
freak
you out if you woke up with it. Yeah.
I would be freaked out, but I mean, how cool would that be? You know, you've said that within days you were aware of this new gift. So, you know, tell us how that happened. You know, one day you just walk by a piano and start playing?
No, I went over. I was going to get ready to go home to Colorado, and I was feeling better. I recovered quickly, but I was still groggy, but I was definitely coming around and feeling much better after my accident about 4 or 5 days afterwards. And I went to visit my best friend, Rick, and he's a musician as well. And when I sat down and we were chatting, he had a piano at his house, and for some reason I just felt drawn. I felt like I had to touch it. And I sat down and played, and it was just an enormous rush because I had never saw my fingers do anything like that on the piano in my entire life. And when they just started going, I mean, Rick and I just sat there and looked at each other. I mean, he was in tears. I was in tears. And we sat there for the whole night, and we just kept going. I just kept on playing.
It's incredible.
And,
did you play songs, or just did you have music in your head?
It was just in my head. It was just already there. It's just like right now in conversation, my mind is, I have a symphony going on right now that's just in the background as we speak.
You when you wrote in your email to me, you had, I'll quote you, you said, as I shut my eyes, I found these black and white structures moving from left to right, which in fact would represent in my mind a fluid, continuous stream of musical notation. So are you able to turn that off? Because I would imagine it could be maddening.
I guess it's tiring because it's like my brain is always working, so I'm always looking for ways to stimulate my mind to go different places, whether it's, you know, I find my peace fishing, and that's, I fly fish and with my brother quite often, and that seems to slow me down a little bit and take me away. It's still going, nonetheless, but it seems to not be so intense, or at least I'm focused on doing something else. And that goes for other things, you know, like when I'm with my children and doing things on that spectrum, it does deteriorate a little bit and then slows down. It's still there, and it's always going. So I haven't learned how to turn it off, and I'm not really sure if I want to. It's if you can imagine yourself walking through life with this incredible orchestration to your every step, that's what I live every day. Wow. This orchestra is playing not only to me but for me, and I guess at this point I welcome it, because it is one of those things that, if it does stay with me, I guess you have to learn how to live with it and turn it into something beautiful, and that's exactly what it is.
And you also said that it's turned into almost like a recall also, that you can recall prior, you know, pieces of music.
Yes,
and it's etched in your mind.
Yes, once I play a piece, and it's not all pieces, it's most, I'd say about 70% of what I play. If I played a piece right now for you, if we sat down and I didn't play it for another year and you and I sat down in 12 months, I would play that exact same piece, every note, exactly like I played it for you the first time.
Well,
and I really wasn't aware of that until I actually did a TV interview, and I ended up doing two interviews with the same station about a year and a half apart. And I jokingly just said to the to the journalist, or the lady interviewing me, I said, maybe I should play you that same piece I played for you when we met. And she said, I would like that. And I said, well, let's see what happens. And so we recorded everything, and sure enough, it was exactly as I had showed her the first time.
Yeah. And do you play by ear? I mean, you said that you played guitar younger. Could you
Yes.
read music?
So no, I can't read. I'm basically a by-ear player, especially when it comes to other instruments. But when I hear something, I mean, it takes a quick second to figure out. I can figure it out in a matter of, you know, if you played anything just off the top, if you played a Joni Rivers song or something, it would take me, you know, 20 seconds, a minute to learn the structure of it quickly. It's pretty quick.
Wow. And what about your kids? You said you have
children
and you have grandchildren, you have a grandchild. Do they have musical abilities?
No, but they can dance.
Okay.
You know,
so they've got
son,
rhythm. That's good.
They do have rhythm, and you know that they're music lovers. My oldest son Alex, he really has a passion to mix music and on that spectrum. You know, he likes that area of it. And then my middle daughter Sydney is just a music lover as well, and she's an incredible dancer, a real dancer. And my youngest daughter, Morgan, she's just a large music fan. They all love music, but none of them musically inclined. Morgan, my youngest, has been dabbling with the piano, and we sit together every now and then and do, you know, play together. And she is, you know, I wouldn't say she can play the piano, but I can say she's definitely catching on quickly.
Right.
Musically inclined.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there was a genetic basis to it, because, you know, my grandfather could play, he used to be a jazz musician, and he played, you know, by ear, and he was just phenomenal. And nobody else in the family can, I mean, we can't sing, we can't, you know, play an instrument, we can dance, but, you know, none of us have that musical ability. Now, your mom, who has been your best friend through your whole life. You know, you know, it's very touching when you talk about when you told her, you asked her to meet you at a store or something. I mean, she must have just flipped out.
I didn't tell her. When I got home that night to my mom's house, because I was obviously staying there during my visit, I didn't tell her that evening when I got to her house, because it was late at night and she, you know, she was sleeping. I went to bed and I was just trying to absorb it all. And the next morning when I woke up and we were having coffee, and I said, you know, I want to take you to the music store. I want to show you something. And she, you know, the first thing she thought is, well, what do you want to buy? You know, what would you like? Are you going to purchase something? And I was like, no, I just want to show you this real quick. And so we drove over to the music store and sat down at the piano, and it was quite comical. I mean, it was an extremely powerful moment because I started playing, and her first reaction was she just started crying. She didn't have anything to say. She just sat there and cried. And I won't forget, because the salesman came over to us and he said, you know, are you interested in purchasing this piano? And I said, well, absolutely not. It's a $50,000 piano, and I'm just here to, I don't even play the piano. I just wanted to show my mother this. And he's like, no, you know, you play piano. I was listening to you over there. And I said, no, I really don't. And he said, well, how long have you played? And I said, well, about 7.5 hours now. and the whole time the salesman thought I was messing with him, and still to this day I think he still thinks I was, you know, messing with him. I don't know if he ever heard of what happened, you know, afterwards and how the rest of the story goes, but it was kind of comical because he refused to believe me, and my mom said, I don't know what to say. And I said, there really isn't anything to say, and I guess I got my birthday present, my 40th birthday present. You know, it was like 20 days before my birthday. So it's just the way I looked at it. And she just sat there in awe.
You know, you had said, that God decided to give me my birthday present a bit early. You know, I mean, clearly this is a miracle. I mean, in my eyes, anyway, this is a miracle. You know, has this changed you spiritually, you know, were you a very spiritual or religious person before, and has it changed your view on miracles and gifts?
I grew up in a Christian family, in a pretty conservative Lutheran family in the Midwest, so I always had a strong belief in God, and that was really how I was brought up. And certainly as an adult, I continued my Christianity, but I think after my, and as far as spirituality, I consider myself a very spiritual person. I think after the accident, what I saw transpiring was it humbled me to the point where I became more patient with life. I became more interested in other areas that I wasn't as interested in. I really found motivation to work with people directly, especially special needs children. I did find, the one thing that I did discover shortly after my accident was when I'm near special needs children, especially autistic children, I have this incredible connection. And I don't know how to put it into words, but when I got to meet Tony DeBloy, which he is a blind autistic savant, a musical genius. I didn't even know who he was, and he showed up front row, center seat to watch me play at a charity, and I had no idea he was going to be there. And when he came up to me with his mother, my first instinct, I broke down, and I had this immediate emotional connection with this human being that I had never experienced in my life. On a higher level, I don't even know how to put it into words. And
it changes
that seems,
you, yeah.
It really does. And I tell my friends and my family, if you want to experience some wonderful parts of life, go spend some time at with some autistic children, or Down syndrome child, or you know, it doesn't matter. They're all amazing. But I seem to find this incredibly strong connection with special needs children and adults. And I think that was part of the gift. And that's the part that I consider a miracle, because it has changed me as a human being.
You know, it absolutely does. And, you know, people all the time look at the negatives. And, you know, there are so many positives because, I mean, it just changes you for the better. It makes you a different human being when you have a child, or you know, you have a close connection to you know, a child with a special needs. And you know, when you were younger though, you used to coach baseball, so I'm sure that you had, you know, some children that had special needs that maybe you weren't even aware of at the time. But you had said that you know, you were familiar with, you know, people caring for others with special needs because your aunt had cerebral palsy. And
yes.
You used to watch your mother take care of her.
All my life. My mother was, you know, her closest, and they're all close. My mom's family is extremely close, but my mother seems to be the caretaker and the mediator of the family, and she always has been. But, you know, she cared for her sister throughout my whole life since I was a child. And, you know, as I read through my journals and I look back at growing up years, I really look at that as the stepping stones to where I am today. I believe I was put in that place and to watch my mother go through that with her sister. And it just kind of drew me in, and as well as my brother. I mean, we both have these very intense desires to touch people that are, you know, special people. And I don't look at those people with needs as a disability. It's really a whole different view for me because in my personal view, it's as close as you can get to purity.
Right.
And they don't know any other thing but to love and but to be pure. You know, the anger issues and all the little things that they deal with and their struggles, those are just obstacles to me. I really have been, I guess it's softened me up to a point where I look a little deeper into these people, and it's it really has become my whole design. And that's really what I'm, the direction I'm going is I will spend the rest of my life working with charitable causes and giving back.
It gives you a purpose. I mean, really,
it
really does.
Does.
And, you know, so it's given you even more than the musical ability. I mean, it's just incredible.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, you know,
I look at the music as just a bonus, you know. I really do.
You know, I read somewhere that in some ways, you know, it's a gift. In some ways, it's a curse. And what are the negatives about this new acquired skills that you have?
Well, the negatives are physically, excuse me, the physical is I'm going deaf. I deal with these migraines that basically knock me to the ground. I can't function with them. I have to keep an eye on the changes in my brain in case, obviously, any of those damaged areas turn into something different.
Right.
Those are the physical aspects. As far as looking at it like a, what was the other word you called it, either a gift or a what? I read
curse.
This in the movie,
right.
Stuff, too. Yeah, the curse. I don't view it like that. I think in order to step through life and reach other higher levels, I think you have to give. And you may give, whether it be a headache or a dollar or a broken finger, it doesn't really matter what you give, but I think you have to sacrifice something to step
right.
up to that next platform in life.
Right.
And in this situation, that's all I'm doing is dealing with some of these obstacles so I can enjoy these other gifts that I've been so lucky to experience.
And, you know, it's really taken you on a whole new path in your life.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and I remember in the email that you sent me, I mean, corporate America was really not your thing. So this really was fantastic for you.
Well, I loved corporate America on the aspect that it paid me.
Right.
I love the fact that they gave me a paycheck. And it was easier because when you leave your corporate job and you're going into a brand new field of work, you know, I walked away from not a ton of money, but a reasonably good income. And life changes. When your finances change, things change.
Right.
And I was willing to give that up because I knew, you know, okay, hey, if I can go this way and if I can just spend the rest of my life working with people and sharing my personal life experience, that's exactly what I didn't have to second guess it. I knew it. I just knew.
And it took you into the direction of a music career also.
Yes.
So, you know,
yes,
why don't you tell us about that? You're into Christian rock, right?
You know, I like it all. As a Christian person, I definitely like a lot of the Christian stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's got that positive, you know, storyline based around music. I enjoy that. But I listen to everything from Beethoven to Nine Inch Nails and everything in between.
Right. And your CD was Full Circle, right? Your first
CD? Yes, that was the first one, the instrumental I did. Yes, and then the new one we're working on right now. And I've been done with the material for the new one, but we keep running into problems because I'm creating music at such a, at such an enormous pace that I keep changing my mind right. on what I want to go on the album. And then, you know, all these people involved with me now, they're, you know, they get frustrated and say, well, no, but we, this is our deadline. And I'm saying, no, you know, give me, you got to work with me here because I don't know what's coming out tomorrow. I may come up with something way better or different. And that's been going on for 2 years now. So, you know, there's some people that are frustrated because of deadlines and timelines. But at the same time, I think I should have that right to pick and choose as an artist what I think best displays me as a musician.
Right. I mean, ultimately, what would you like to do? Would you like to be in a band? Would you like to be a concert pianist? I mean, it's just incredible. And I can imagine it's got to be really frustrating. You know, if you do something one day and it's really good, and then the next, you know, you wake up and you have something great, you know?
Yeah, it's even better the next day sometimes, and then it slows you down. But at the same time, you know, you do work through that. I think I'd like to, you know, I'd like to really, on a larger platform, I'd like to play with Elton John someday.
Mm-hmm.
Since Oprah's only got a few shows left, it doesn't look like I'm going to get on the show. So I'm begging to have lunch with her because I just simply want to say hello. I would like to, you know, play in a full band. I am working on some stuff for the summer that would entail working with an enormous production, which I can't talk about, I can't say the specifics, but I can tell you that it's with a large, large production, and I am working with autistic musical genius Tony DeBlois, which is like a dream come true to me.
Oh, you'll have to keep us posted on that.
Yeah, oh, I absolutely will. But at the same time, you know, I would like to maybe do a show in Vegas possibly later on. I would like to play with other artists and somewhere, and some, whether it's opening for them or joining them on stage for just a song or two. So I'm wide open at this point.
How do other musicians receive you?
Most of them kind of sit there and just kind of stare for a couple minutes just to get a grip on it, because I only play piano with 6 fingers instead of 10. And that's the first thing that real piano players say to me. They always notice that right away, and they're like, why are you only using 3 fingers on that hand? And I'm like, well, because the other two are, I don't know, lazy, sleeping.
I don't
and,
need them.
yeah, at this point I don't need them, although I'd like to use them. They're just not functioning like the other fingers for some reason. But most musicians are very, very open and definitely have all kinds of questions, and they compliment my abilities. At the same time, when I sit down with a real trained piano player, I can't get enough of watching them, because it's almost overload for me watching them play, because I'm studying what their fingers are doing, I'm studying where they're hitting the piano keys, and it seems like a whole different world to me.
Right.
If you were to put sheet music in front of me, I'd probably get a migraine. I have no idea what it means.
That's incredible.
And so, I mean, other musicians are extremely receptive. And when I sit down with another musician, it's just extremely creative. It just goes on and on and on and on. So I'm sorry?
I was going to say, you're using all of this really to raise awareness of brain
yes.
injuries, traumatic brain injuries. You know, so what charity events are you doing? You know, what are you working with? And then I want to go into, before we run out of time, you know, you spoke earlier about your work with Dr. Treffertz and the book Islands of Genius, and I was curious about that.
Yes. As far as right now with charitable causes, I'm involved with the National Brain Injury Foundation, which is founded by Lisa Jones in New York, and I've just become passionate about what her life work and educating the general public on traumatic brain injury. I would like to end up, you know, shooting a couple infomercials, if you will, for public awareness. I think it's so important that we reach out and we continue educating people on this situation, because I think it's swept under the rug and to some extent. I think we have great things to do still. and I just want to be a part of it. And if I'm going to be in the spotlight or if I'm going to be in the media, then I'm going to use my abilities to display what I believe in, and that's supporting all these different charitable causes and traumatic brain injury, autism, cancer. I visit, you know, the children's hospital, and the cancer children knock me to my knees. That's my passion, is to somehow make a difference in each of these, or a little bit, and bring a bunch of people with me on my journey and say, come help me support this, because our world needs to lift these people up, and we need to educate so we can continue to give them tools to use throughout their life.
Right, and you know, because the reality of the situation is that most people with a traumatic brain injury do not have the results that you have.
Exactly.
You know, so it is important to give back. You're very, very fortunate. You know, and you're creating the Derek Amato Foundation. So what is that going to be about?
The foundation, I created this pay it forward system that would allow us to take a percentage of the money I get paid when I go out and do speaking engagements or a performance. So we basically just took, instead of paying an agent to book me, we just took that percentage and said, let's just give it back. So if it's a referral or what have you, then we make that person choose another charity of their choice, and then mm-hmm. we fund that, and then we roll it over to that.
Oh, that's
so
great.
My foundation is a charitable foundation that will support other charity organizations, as well as funding struggling families financially, homeless, autism, brain injury. We'll branch out and reach out to all of these people. And,
you know,
who
would be great
gets,
to meet?
The more we can
I don't know if you know him, but Michael Buchholz. He was a music producer. Do you know him?
No, I do not.
Okay, well, Michael Buchholz, he's a music producer, he's a musician, and he's an ASPE, and he's actually just started a foundation to help, you know, families with veterans financial difficulty. You two would be great together.
Well, then we should definitely say hello someday.
I will make the introduction. I'll call him tomorrow.
Yes.
You know, I wanted to get back to the book, Islands of Genius, because now, was this book a compilation of different people that have acquired these savant skills, or was this just about you?
It was about a group of people, and even more than that, what it was is it was Dr. Treffert's work on really the savant studies and what it entails and the possibilities and the endless possibilities of these gifted people. And it does touch, you know, I'm just a little tiny piece of it, but there's probably 8 or 10 people that are mentioned in the book. But it really is more of a medically structured, you know, reference to the study of savant. And it really is. It's an eye-opening read.
Great. But what I'm curious about, as far as that is, you know, I know that you're the only documented person to have musical savant skills from a brain injury, but others have acquired savant skills. Is that correct?
Yes.
From brain injuries?
Yes.
Did he find any commonalities between you?
At this point, it's hard to say because there's so little known about my situation. So, you know, I really don't know how to answer that because I really haven't discussed it in depth with Dr. Treffert in reference to the similarities between other acquired savants, but he has mentioned that there are some obvious reasoning or some purpose to our experiences that reflect similarity. So
I'm going to have to read that book.
Yeah, I think you'll find it very interesting. It's just, it's well written, and he's just, you know, honestly, he's just an incredible, incredible human being, and his work should be highly, which it is, and he is just an amazing man. I've been very lucky to work with him.
Well, you know, I would like for you to tell the audience where they can keep up with you, you know, where they'll be able to find your music, and, you know, when you start, I guess once you have the new album out, you'll be making appearances. Do you have a website that they can follow where they can find out where you are?
They can go to DerekAmatoMusic.com, and that actually redirect them over to my other site, which is my blogging site, because that's really what it is. It's my writings and everything on it. So they can keep up with
me
through that.
And the blog is great.
It's real writing. You know, I don't edit stuff. I don't have writers do it for me. That's what I am, and that's who I am. And it gets a little intense at times, but you know what? I think people that take time out of their life to look into my world deserve to see the real me, instead of all the sugar-coated stuff, you know. So you can keep up by, going through the website, DerekAmadaMusic.com, and then, of course, we'll be announcing charitable events. I'll be speaking at quite a few events this summer and doing some performances, as well as some great other new projects that are coming up that I believe we get to announce in just a couple weeks.
Okay, well, I'll be following you, and I'll be announcing them. I just want to say,
glad to have your support.
Before we close, that I think that other people could have acquired these skills and used them for personal gain. And what you're doing is just incredible, because you're taking a gift that you've been given, and you're making a difference. So I'm just so happy that you're with us tonight.
Thank you so much for acknowledging, and your words mean the world to me. Thank you. I'm on a mission, and I am going to make a change in this world. It might be a tiny one, but it's going to be something.
Well, they all count.
I'm surrounded by wonderful people that assist me, and my friends and family, and the people that look into my work are the ones that really make all this happen. I'm just the vehicle, and I guess as a team we'll continue to push forward and make great things happen.
Well, I wish you continued success. I'm so glad you joined us. And you
Thanks.
Are on Facebook. Exactly. Actually, that's where you found me, was on Facebook.
Yes, it is.
So, give Derek Amato a follow on Facebook, and he's on Twitter. And really, just keep up with him, because he's going to be somebody to watch. So I want to thank you. I thank you very much.
Thank you,
I will
Marianne,
make the introductions with Michael anytime.
Yes, I look forward to it.
Okay. And before we close, I just want to mention that Facebook has been driving me out of my mind this week. They've had all of us update our pages. So we are now a fan page. And I really hope that everybody comes over. We had a lot of followers on our group page, and I hope that they continue to support us over on our new Facebook fan page. We had the launch of our new website. It is fabulous. And I want everybody to take a look. I'm really just so pleased with it. We're going to be adding a lot of resources. It's going to be a place for parents to go to find resources, to find support, and hopefully to find some inspiration from the hosts and the moderators of the show. So as I end the show each night, you are your child's best advocate. If not you, then who? Become an informed, educated parent on the Coffee Clutch. Thank you very much, Derek.
Thanks, Marianne. Take care of yourself and continued success sharing what you do with everyone.
Thank you very much. And thank you to Pierrette and Chuck over at the chat. Have a good night, everybody. I opened the show with Derek Amato's This Time Tomorrow, and it was beautiful. And I'm going to just play a little bit of Little Things as we end the show.